I'm Ilan Kadun, and I am the moderator for the panel today. How's DragonCon going for you so far? First day? Everybody's wide awake. Next day, maybe not so much, but thank you all for coming. So this panel is STEM education for women and minorities, STEM being science, technology, engineering, and math. We'll introduce ourselves in a minute, but before that, I just wanted to check, is there anyone else here in the audience that feels you need to be up on this panel? So I'm going to ask for what's called a fist of five, which is something we do in agile development, with a five meaning hell yeah, and a one meaning no. So if you think you're a three, four, or five, I'm going to say raise your hand on the count of three. So again, think. A five means yeah, you got to be on this panel. Four maybe, three, so-so. All right? Everybody thinking what it's going to be? Okay. One, two, three. All right, I see a five here, a couple ones, a five, a one, a four, and a five. Okay, so the fives and the fours, I want you to kind of stand up and say why you think you should be on this panel. All right? Yeah.
Hi, I should be on the panel. My name is Vaughn Dinkins.
Can you guys hear her in the back?
Can you hear me well?
All right. Give her a mic. Do we have a mic? We have the box. Speak into the box. Okay.
Can you hear me?
All right, turn on the box. Okay. If not, if it doesn't work, speak into this.
Take the batteries.
All right, here, you can speak
Yvonne.
Into this.
Yvonne. Dr. Dinkins, right here.
Yes.
Dr. Dinkins.
Sorry.
Yeah, I shouldn't be on. My name is Yvonne Dinkins. I'm a PhD in the biomedical sciences. I have a background in the lipid chemistries, biochemistry, analytical chemistry, and I am in right now a clinical scientist, associate director of clinical science in one of the largest clinical research organizations. I've seen pharma across the gamut, worked for pharma and biotech for a number of years, and boy, do I have stories to tell.
Okay, I think she's good. The audience agree? Yep, okay. Put her in a chair. Okay, let's see another one. Who else was a five? Okay.
Come on up, bring a chair.
Yep. Now we got a chair there.
Oh, I got a chair on there. This side.
You got a chair here, a chair here. Yeah.
All right. Hey guys, my name is Kendra Amona. I graduated a couple years ago with my bachelor's in physics, concentration in astronomy. During college, I went to Georgia State. I was like one of like 3 to 5 girls in all of my classes for the most part. And I focus on education research for my senior year to do more outreach for women and minorities in science. I currently work at Discover Science Center. We do a lot of outreach of homeschools and different communities. And it's all female staff, and we do really hands-on hardcore science with that. So it's really fun.
Right. Yeah. I think she's a yes. Right. Any other fives or fours? Yeah?
Yeah, I was.
Yeah. Be confident. On this panel, you gotta be confident.
I'm just shy of being on the panel. My name is Christopher Craig. I'm a Master's of Computer Science at University of Tennessee. I currently work at Oak Ridge National Laboratory in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, doing a variety of my specialty is in computer science, and in particular, computer security, vulnerability research, and things of that nature. It is a rare field to find, it's notoriously rare to find minorities or even women in this particular specialty. And I don't know, I find it difficult to boast myself in this way.
We need a guide. You'll be our token guide. And are you going to come up? In the red shirt. Yeah, nudge her, because she just spoke. Yeah. Yeah, you. Come on.
Yeah, the gentleman.
Yeah, and I think that's all we have room for without somebody falling off the stage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
You have enough room here?
My apologies to anyone else. All right, but feel free to speak up as we go. Okay. All right, this one's fine.
Perfect.
Okay, so the people who haven't introduced themselves, let me introduce myself. My name's Ilanka. I still am in the computer industry going on about 30 years now. I've been coming to DragonCon for almost maybe a little over 20 years now. It's definitely been one of the milestones in my life. It has changed my life on multiple occasions, so I keep coming and I moderate panels. I am an oddity on this panel in that I do not have a college degree, but I have still managed to find a very interesting path. Okay, next, let's go Theta.
Good afternoon. I'm Theta Daniels-Race. I'm a professor at Louisiana State University. I have a doctorate in electrical and computer engineering, really EE. And really, yes, go Tigers? Okay, yes. And really more the physics side of things. In short, one might say nanotechnology, materials science, electronic materials, etc. So I work with teeny tiny stuff that, you know, we can't see in real life, but, you know, we say it's there. People believe us. No, it's there. So as I tell people, I can't fix your house wiring or stop your, now it's DVD, but it used to be VCR from Blinking 12, you know, no. But I can tell you about those atoms and molecules and electrons running in there. So that's what I do. Look forward to talking to y'all.
All right.
Some more about me. During college, I did work.
And what's your name?
Oh, Kendra Mona, that's my name. I did work at Hard Labor Creek Observatory in Rutledge, Georgia. Long nights, 8 p.m. to 3 a.m. nights doing research. I also did outreach there, and then I worked my way to Fernbank Science Center and did their science nights over there. And now my focus is mainly outreach and education. We do a lot of homeschool students who don't really have access to science and math on a daily basis, and just giving them a chance to explore what they like to do in the community.
All right. Donna.
Hi there. My name is Donna Bartley. I am an attorney. I practice law in North Carolina, and I may be a practicing attorney, but I'm not your attorney. That's my disclaimer. Anything I say today is purely educational. If you're looking for legal advice, you need to find your own attorney. My practice area is in compliance, ethics, and licensing issues. I do not have a STEM background formally. I was derailed when I was in college in the early 80s.
That's not a formal thing, derailing.
In the early 80s, there was very little support in where I was for a woman. Well, I was the first person in my family to go to college at all. So I had no role models and very little support. So I floundered a bit. I tried computer science and very quickly found myself unwelcome. So I ended up staying in the humanities. I dabbled in, you know, technical support. I understand technology, but I am certainly not a computer scientist. However, in my current role, what I see a lot of is a lot of folks who don't understand STEM at all writing laws, writing legislation, trying to interpret the laws. I see judges who have no idea what they're talking about, trying to understand what the legislator meant when it passed a law on copyright. And the legislator didn't understand what it was talking about when it wrote that law on copyright. So my emphasis is really, we need more representation. We need more women and minorities going into STEM fields and then taking that STEM background into law school or into politics, getting active to make sure that the folks we have in our representing us in the courts and in the legislators are actually representing us and doing a good job at it.
I cannot follow that up.
What's your name?
My name is Christopher Craig. I'm a computer security expert at Oak Ridge National Laboratories. I'm a master of computer science, also awarded at University of Tennessee. Much like Donna's background, I dabbled in computer science. I had the knack, so to speak, when I was much younger, and I found it strangely unwelcoming at times. But I did not have the same set of resistance offered in computer science. It is a bit of a boys' club, notoriously known for so. But I was able to kind of continue in that realm. I find myself now at the other end of it, also working at a national laboratory. That also has its own set of representation issues in spite of being globally employed. We do have a lot of variety of people employed from around the world, yet our statistics show that we are not evenly distributed when it comes to particularly STEM backgrounds and those related to technology. And this is not just computer security, my particular forte, but also computing science, big machine learning, things of that nature have a similar problem. So I guess I would love more representation, but the issue is difficult.
Yes.
And it's the data in, people in, is the big problem that I personally am trying to focus on with Capture the Flag events, at least for computer security, and other kind of events to encourage more high school students and middle school students to take an interest in computer security and computing in general, and to stick with it, because it's not going away. So, yeah.
Definitely. Hi, I'm Haley Tsukayama. I work for the Electronic Frontier Foundation. I'm an activist for our legislation team. Prior to this, I was a reporter at the Washington Post in the technology section for 8 years. I've only been at EFF a year, so this is my first DragonCon representing EFF. It's very exciting. To echo some of what's been said, as I said, I work on the legislation work, and certainly we see that lack of technical understanding, and I think particularly what I found so appealing about this panel is we also see a lack of understanding from legislators and people who advise them on sort of how the technical issues affect women and affect communities and minority communities. And I think having more people in the field that can speak to sort of looking at legislation through both of those lenses would be incredibly beneficial to everyone. So.
Absolutely. Hi. As I said earlier, I'm Dr. Yvonne Dinkins. I am an associate Associate Clinical Science Director at IQVIA Biotech, which
What's your name?
Yvonne Dinkins.
Okay.
Thank you. So, I was hired to help the company with their data. And in helping them with their data, that means finding it, understanding it. To me, that means understanding it overall. I created a data visualization platform for the company that they now sell to their customers. And it allows the sponsors that we represent to understand what their data is saying at a glance. I mean, nobody wants to review Excel files, but believe it or not, this is where the industry is. So there are others that are like Spotfire and Tableau that people use, but they're not quite as fast as what we've used. So I've created this data visualization platform for them, and I've seen that through creation of this, people have a real aversion to using computers. It's just scary. The people who are taking care of you have an issue with using computers. But that's a whole different topic. So, and using computers will help you, but we need to keep an eye on them because they are only as good as their programmers. So that is what I'm doing currently. I'm also trying to move it. It's moving throughout the company and outside of the company. And we are also trying to move this even further outside.
Okay, so first of all, welcome to our first time panelists here. Thank you for getting up on here. Being brave, and often just the topic of this panel is going out into STEM does involve courage and being brave and stepping up, even when you weren't expecting maybe that you were going to be asked to step up. So the topic of the panel is there's a growing effort to promote STEM for women and minorities. What can we do to help? And are we putting too much pressure on girls and children of color to fulfill our own aspirations for them? So does anybody have a story on that or a thought on that?
Okay.
Go, Theta.
I'll start as a mom, and I won't look, even though my son said, don't mention me. So I'm not looking. But I have two. So there's another one. I'll look at him. He's getting ready to sit down with his wife. They're both STEM people, by the way. All right, so are we putting too much pressure? I'll just say afterwards, you can ask my kids, but I'd have to say no, because as has been mentioned, we need people in the field, period, right?
You know, in just the general story of when you have greater diversity on a solving a problem, you may very well work towards a better solution. And I'm not sure if it's an urban legend, but there was a story many years back before airbags, when airbags first entered cars. Some, maybe not, maybe this room, but some may be old enough to remember that, like myself. And there was an issue initially of the airbags crushing people in the front seat. And one of the things that came out years later was that there were no women, for example, on these in these research groups. So nobody thought about what happens if something of that pressure hits someone of a smaller size, you know, like generally speaking, a female or even a child. So that's just one example there. I've definitely run into situations where I know for a fact, if I had not been in the room, that top people would not have even been considered. Most recently at my university, in my department, electrical and computer engineering, and I have been there since 2003, and I'm the only woman still in my department. One of probably, maybe, certainly less than two hands, maybe around one hand at the most, in the entire College of Engineering. And I come from an institution of 30,000 students, right? And the College of Engineering is pretty big within that 30K. I'll also mention quickly, prior to that, my prior institution was Duke University, which I worked at for over a decade. I know I don't look it right, but no, I worked at for quite a while before I went to LSU. And when I started there in the 90s, I was the only woman and the only person of color, particularly African American, in the entire School of Engineering. They said there had been one woman before me, but she had either passed away or left due to serious illness just a few years before. So I was it, right? And the bottom line of it is, as far as kids go, if that's the situation still, right, I don't think we're putting too much pressure. It depends on every family. You know, my family was as such. My parents were both teachers, elementary and high school, and they never said, oh, you must make an A or we're going to spank you or something. They always said, do your best. But they also said, we know what your best is, right? So the deal of it is you have to do what's best, of course, for your family and your child. You know what you could push or not push. You don't want kids, you know, going nuts because, you know, mom or dad says, I have to get an A. And there are kids, unfortunately, in that position. But at least I would call it encouragement, hopefully loving pushing, and constantly letting them know, given that they want to do it, that they can do it. And knowing the difference between what might be reticence due to lack of confidence or reticence due to they just want to do something else, and that's fine too. So I don't think we're over-pushing unless you're in a situation where you're, you know, putting your kid into a nervous breakdown or something, but that's not a STEM thing necessarily.
Well, and I think so often what, you know... So often, you know, what happens is, you know, we're talking about, are we pushing people too hard? But really, we aren't giving people who are interested enough support, right? I think it's really, that's the way you have to look at it and frame it.
Mm-hmm. I would go as far as saying, know your audience. Understand what the person needs and then push. Well, yes, push. Because there are some people who are not ready for electronics or for any particular area at any particular time. And it's up to those of us who have been there to recognize that and to bring them along at their pace. And that way they will not feel quite so pressured. Mm. For example, I have two daughters. One is a computer geek. Hi, Adrian.
And she has a couple of panels.
And she has panels, yeah. And I have another one who is more of a social person, takes after her father, sorry. But she's fabulous on computers. Both of them are really good with that. But I recognized very early, actually when they were born, what kind of people they were. And I just kind of stood back and let them grow into what they were. Had exposure for them, just exposed them to whatever there was, and let them move forward themselves. I don't know that they felt pressure, but but they never complained.
Well, my daughter did complain. As long as we're talking about our kids.
Okay.
My daughter's in the back of the room hoping that I won't point her out. I think one of the things we need to provide our kids is opportunity. And, you know, it's not a matter of pushing them. It's a matter of showing them what those opportunities are. I know when I went to college, the default was a liberal arts major if you didn't know what else you wanted to do. Why? Why wouldn't the default be math? Math is easy. Like, why wouldn't you pick something that's, it's, well, okay, sorry.
I know, right?
I mean, think about it, right?
Why?
I mean, I would much rather study algebra than Greek history. I mean, like, think about something that you can actually use in your day-to-day existence. I am never going to need to know about the battle between Greece and Rome. I'm just not. I know history repeats itself. I get that. But there are subject lines, subject areas that our students can go into that are actually going to be useful day to day.
Sure.
Why not just encourage them to do that if they don't know what else they're going to do? I mean, and they also need to know what those opportunities are when they graduate. I mean, what are you going to do with a liberal arts major? Go to grad school. What are you going to do with a math major? I mean, what are you going to do with any major? Exactly. I mean, it's that same question, but for some reason, kids looking at the sciences don't look at it the same way. And I think that's the door we need to open.
There's some people that really want to talk right now.
I know. All right.
Do we have the box? Where's the box?
Wonder Woman was first, actually.
All right. Wonder Woman.
Hi. I'll just talk loud. So I am Faith, or Diana, whatever. I work in IT. I have an undergrad and a master's degree in IT.
Stand up, Diana, please.
Yeah, okay.
I took my shoes off.
Fine. We're not looking at your feet.
I got to get a picture of this.
Let there be sound. So I did my undergrad, my master's degree in IT. I work in the IT field at a paper mill, so just working at a paper mill, already not going to be a lot of women there. It's fun. But especially in IT, I'm the only woman in my department, but when you're talking about, you know, the whole pressure thing, parents pressuring your kids, one thing I came across in my research for my thesis, my thesis was entirely just women in IT. I think the title was like computing the role, whatever my title was. Anyways, I'm bad at this. But the whole, on the opposite side of the spectrum, instead of providing pressure, I noticed something I came across was, even if the parents don't understand, because I mean, technology is always changing. Even in IT, I don't understand half the stuff that's out there. You know, a lot of it was not even just pressuring your kids, just providing support, saying, hey, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, but you can do that. You got this. You know, that was a big contributing factor to keeping women in the STEM fields and just, you know, that sort of thing. So even if the parents didn't understand what was going on, it's just, you know, yes, you can do this. Just having someone there saying, yes, you can. Like, that was a big thing that a lot of, you know, young girls didn't have growing up. And I think that was one of my research points I made, was they just need someone that says, yes, you can do it. Even if they don't understand what they're talking about, like the parents, just saying, yes, they can do that. That was
excellent.
So not the pressure. It's like the opposite end, right, of the pressure thing, just support. So I don't
right know. Behind you there.
Running microphone or video camera too. Talking about pressure that children are on, or young women, minorities are on going into STEM fields, I think one of the things we're not doing that's a disservice to them is we're not adequately preparing them for what a career actually looks like. What you learn in school has absolutely nothing to do with what your job is going to look like day to day. I work in incident response. So when I show up, that means your day has absolutely gone to hell. And that means I deal with a lot of people who are very, very upset and very frustrated and very worked up and thinking their world is about to end. There's nothing in any of the programs, any of the classes I took in my master's degree that said, this is how you're going to deal with somebody at CISO having an absolute major meltdown, mm-hmm. you know, in a conference room because he just lost his domain controllers. Which is awesome, by the way. So much fun when that happens. So I think we can do a better job of actually preparing young people overall for what the career actually looks like.
Okay. Here, and then in the back after.
Hi, I'm Alana. I'm a PhD student in mechanical engineering at Georgia Tech, and I just finished doing my undergrad there as well. And I think we also need to talk about the way STEM education is structured, especially in a lot of colleges, and how to make that environment in and of itself more healthier, I would say, because a lot of it is still in this mindset of, let's weed people out. We are the hard majors. This is where the smart people are. If you can't hack it, then you can leave or whatever. One, there shouldn't be shame for trying something and finding out that it's not your thing and switching to something else. My brother tried biomedical engineering for a year, decided it wasn't for him, and he transferred and got a nursing, went to nursing school instead. And I think also just the mental health aspects of college are in a lot of talk today, but the way it impacts populations like women, minorities, especially I've seen how it impacts queer and trans people as well, especially in fields like STEM, which can, in certain places, oddly trend conservative. That needs to be considered, and if that's the case, I think we can make a better kind of environment for everyone overall.
Actually, was it Alana?
Yes.
There's been a lot of discussion of pressure, and you brought up a very interesting point that while I have a kid on the way, but I'm not a parent yet, and I think about pressure in particular. And when I think about the type of pressure I experienced on my academic trajectory and on my professional one, it didn't necessarily come from my parents, which the question particularly focused on. It came from the environment I was in, and it came from, if anything, tokenism. The fact that I am one and alone, in particular in my field. So it's not necessarily that my parents can, while they may be cheering for me, I don't necessarily have a lot of other black engineers I can talk to about, the fact that, for example, during a data mining class, I found out that if you are in the particular data set we were studying, if you are homeless, we were doing trends, and the trends were that you tend to stay down there, and it was very damning to kind of find that information out. And the professor knew the answer already, but kind of posing the question was kind of sensitive to me. And you're put in a lot of positions where your particular thoughts and feelings are not necessarily those of the whole. And often, you're right, there is a bit of a pressure to have gumption and to have grit and to just push through it and suck up. In particular, I'd say more engineering fields than maybe more hard sciences. And I mean, you're a rambling wreck. You are well aware of the particular kind of gumption traps in that. But I think that there is a fair amount of pressure that maybe doesn't always come from the sources you expect it to be.
I wouldn't.
It's a challenge.
I'm not gonna
okay. So, okay. You next, then she's been patient, and then I know you have something to say. Okay.
All right. I just wanted to piggyback on that. I think that the pressure that comes from the administration and from the teachers and the other professors surrounding you is you can't underestimate that. I think you're absolutely right. I think that's one of the issues. That's one of the values of increasing representation. I mean, the more diversity we have on that faculty, the less that, hopefully, I mean, the less that will be an issue, but it is still an issue. I mean, my husband is the director of undergraduate studies at Duke University's biology department. Shout out to Duke. And we were just talking about that this morning, in fact, that you do have that population of dinosaurs who have been there forever. And, you know, they want to do it the way they want to do it because that's how it was when they came up. And it's almost, I hate to use the word hazing, but it's almost a hazing mentality. I went through it, so you're going to go through it too. And that is a real concern. I think that's again, another reason that we need to just continue pushing those boundaries and getting more women and minorities into those areas.
Hi, my name is Kayla Green. This is my best friend, Christian. We're both studying to be systems and industrial engineers at KSU, a little bit north. Okay. Well, I mean, we're doing, okay. We're also doing aerospace, so it's a whole thing. My father's actually an industrial engineer. I had a lot of pressure growing up from him being, for me to be good at math. I wasn't good at math. I'm okay at math. I want to go into a field that has a lot of math. I'm okay with this. I can cope. But the problem is that my mother and my father made me feel like I had to be good at math. I was told multiple times when I was growing up that I was bad at math. And not even by my parents. It was by my teachers. And that's a huge problem in education right now, is that I didn't feel like I was good at math until I was in college at 25. That's a huge issue right now, is that we need to teach our teachers not to tell children they're bad at math. Because otherwise, we end up with kids who, I studied theater for my first year, and by studied, I mean I didn't go to class. I was severely depressed because no one told me that I had other options, even though I was bad at math growing up. So we need to make sure that we're offering these things to children. I'm sure we are now. It's a little bit different. It's been a while since I've been in like elementary school when, you know, it wasn't as math focused. They were like, oh, you don't know multiplications. You're good. You're good. Go on. You're next grade. Get out of my class. So it's a huge issue. Telling a child that they're bad at anything is a problem. It's more of, and we need to encourage and help them grow. And that's, as a person who has gone through it specifically, I mean, it's very dear to my heart. My husband's a teacher. I have to remind him, hey, don't tell any of your children they're bad at anything. Like, just be like, hey, maybe you never go into this, but you can learn. You can be better at this. That's okay. Like, it's okay to start at the bottom and get better. So, I don't know. It's just very important to me.
I happen to agree with you that we do need to teach our teachers. And by our teachers, I mean all of us. We are all teachers. We, first of all, should watch our children and see what type of encouragement or discouragement they are getting. Here's a story here. So when Adrienne was a little girl, she had to have a presentation made. And they said you could use a poster or you can record it. You could do PowerPoint if you know how to use it, but it's going to take you about 3 or 4 weeks to learn PowerPoint.
Seriously?
I said, she said what? She says, yeah, she said it would be about 3 weeks before I could learn it, and my report is due in 2 weeks. I said, sweetie, I can show you in 30 minutes. She goes, no. And you know, kids believe their teachers above anybody. And that was an uphill battle. We had to fight against what the teacher said. She says, I can learn it in 30 minutes? I said, yeah. And I knew it was 15. 15 minutes later, this kid was making graphics and charts and animation. And all you have to do is play with the stuff, yeah, right? Okay. So we need to watch what people are saying to our children. And we need to teach those people how not to be afraid of the new age of computers.
Absolutely.
Good point.
I'm stunned at what my daughter can produce.
I know, right?
And like adding to that, I do workshops with the Girl Scouts. It's about, you know, creating a safe space outside of school. Like, school runs systematically, and that's why I look for outlets that isn't the school system based. If they can know outside of school, they have a safe space to do science and be in a community of people like-minded, they can carry that with them, right? I never grew up with that community of science-based, and like my parents, my dad's an immigrant, Nigeria, if anyone has Nigerian parents, they're really big on education, and so I feel like I had a lot to prove on his part that I could handle my degrees in physics, making it through all that math, all of those theories, and that pressure came from me, like, oh, I didn't really see a lot of female physics. I had one physics teacher in high school, and that's like my only basis of physics going into college. So I had to take it apart. Like, it's about me trying to figure this out. I don't have anything to prove, you know. If I make a certain grade on a test, you know, I don't have to feel, you know, like I have to show it off to people or, you know, prove that, like, oh, I belong in this class, right? I had to take it upon me that I figured this out, and this isn't me to prove that, you know, I belong here. So it was always that thing in the back of your head, that pressure, do you belong, all that stuff. But if you have these outside spaces outside of school to push that, that can carry kids a long way, you know, that a lot of kids didn't have growing up.
Hey, so I'm also in STEM. I'm working on my PhD at Georgia Tech in biology, actually marine ecology. So it's cool in biology. We're finally starting to see a lot more women. Like in my cohort for grad school, it's actually 95% women, which is really awesome.
But the problem is a lot of us are being kind of pressured by advisors and the higher ups to change our personalities for it. So I'm a relatively sensitive person. I'm not the hardest shell. I'm not like over the top sensitive, but I'm kind of a sensitive person. My advisor terrifies. She's the only woman that is a dean in our school. And she terrifies all the girls. No one wants to talk to her. And once you get to know her, you realize she's actually quite soft and quite nice. But she, by modeling that to us and the rest of the girls, and unintentionally, and some of the other pressure from the other advisors, are telling us we have to be hard-shelled. We can't show any emotions. We have to be, like, the men are allowed to cry more in our department than we are. Yeah. Like, if I get frustrated and I go and I'm giving a talk and I show an inch of emotion around those professors, it's, oh, you're a woman. That's why. And so we need to watch that while we're getting women into STEM, we're not like trying to model us to be hard and not be who we are. Like, if you're a tough shell, sure, go be tough shell. But if you're someone who's soft, you shouldn't be being pressured that to survive in our field, that you need to be this person you're not.
I think we had a question up here.
I've heard that I'll get
okay.
There's over here.
All right.
Hi, how are you? When you posed the first question, the one thing that me and my friends talk about, all of us are in some type of field of science, technology, or engineering. The one thing that we always think about for our women, and I'll pose that to you guys and our young girls, is that when we hear pressure, as soon as we see a young girl, especially a young African-American girl, light up her eyes at something that might be science, technology, or engineering, we pounce on them. And what we try to figure out is, how do we go from elementary school where they're, I feel like everybody is interested in everything. They're just like sponges, let's get whatever. But then once they get to middle school, or when they get to high school, how do we cultivate that without putting so much pressure on them to be awesome? I went through that myself. My dad's an engineer, my mom's a teacher. And so they were like, you're gonna do one or the other. And they didn't mean it like that, but I took the pressure on myself to be an engineer like my father. And I actually don't even do all of that. I'm actually a hell of an engineer as well. I have a chemistry degree, but I actually work in retail. So at the end of the day, I was like, forget that. I don't like being in a lab, but I love being around people. But how do we cultivate from giving them so much pressure as an elementary school kid, and then they feel it because you're like, you've got to go to this, and you've got to go to that, and you've got to go to that, and then they get to middle school and high school, and we kind of drop off. How do we go from there to get them into college and still be excited, but not giving them so much pressure when they get into the college world?
I feel like, you know, being a female in STEM, girls in science shouldn't be a trendy thing. It shouldn't be something that's good for marketing. Right? It shouldn't be something like, oh, we should put that in a t-shirt and push on kids because it's trendy. It should be something that should be normalized and made, oh, this should be more common. You know, this is some like trendy thing that like, oh, like this is really exciting. This should be more normalized that like, yeah, you can do the same thing that other scientists, you know, male scientists can do. So it shouldn't be, you know, so glamorized, I feel like, as elementary school, and not be carried on through middle school and stuff. It should be something that be more common than getting kids to get excited.
I think so. Wouldn't it be nice that around our house it was dinosaurs? I mean, who didn't like dinosaurs when they were growing up, right? We had dinosaur toys everywhere. Our daughter was constantly playing in the dirt, going fishing, just all those great physical things that lead you into the sciences. Why can't we just keep doing that? Why don't you just make it normal, make it a part of life, rather than treating it as something so different and unique, and it automatically becomes intimidating at that point.
I'm gonna throw in one quick thing just in case, and if Alanka has the next question for us, because we can go, but I was just gonna,
and then after
yes.
You heard, okay.
I think the very valuable and important thing, I've been grateful and honored to be on this panel in the past, and I'm really excited to see this time especially, is so many people are recognizing these issues or these matters. Whether it's your personal experience, you know, with a family member or with a teacher or just the environment you're in, everybody has mentioned. And so one very good thing is you're spreading awareness more than you know to everyone in the room, and then, of course, hopefully permeating beyond the room.
and maybe we'll get into it later, but I'll say, even though our title is Women and Minorities in STEM, I would say a lot of these issues, they're different issues that affect everybody. I'm not one of these people that's a panacea. Oh, well, you know, the same thing affects everybody and, you know, it's just all monolithic. It's not, right? There are things that affect the women. There's things that affect the men. There's things that affect the minority, the majority, and everything else. You know, I've had mentees that are, you know, women, men, every gender, every race, young white males who were the guy that was the out guy, right? Not, I don't mean out as in gender or sexuality, but out of the clique, right? And so he had a lot of, we shared some issues. But whatever these things may be, what's great here is that so many people are pointing them out and other people are getting to hear them. And that's the most that I've heard it in the times that I've, you know, seen the panel. So applaud, great for y'all. But let me.
Thank you.
I'm a mother of four, and I just pulled my oldest child out to homeschool, and I'm having a hard time in my area, I live in Alabama, of finding those opportunities for homeschoolers in particular, but just we're a very STEM-loving family, so finding like more and more outlets for all my kids to explore their love of STEM. I mean, every single one of my kids wants to go into a STEM field. So, and when you find a resource for homeschoolers in Alabama, it, you know, then winds up being something that, you know, anybody who really loves STEM doesn't want their kids being exposed to. So how do you go about finding, or if there isn't, then creating these opportunities for your kids? And then unrelated, but, well, isn't it all related, is how do you prepare your daughters, your children in general, but you know, daughters and minorities in particular, for what they will experience without scaring them away? How do I tell my girls, this is how men are going to treat you, without making them decide, then I don't want to do it?
And sometimes other
fantastic women too. Question. Yeah. Brilliant question. Okay.
I can touch on that. Yeah. So I work with homeschool and outreach kids, and sometimes we're centered in Roswell, Georgia. We have families coming all the way from Augusta because they're just looking for a center. And a lot of it, like my director is PhD in marine biology. She worked at Georgia Tech, the aquarium, and she just, you know, I'm going to start my own business and do that. So sometimes it just takes someone to say, I see your problem. There's not enough outreach. There's not enough homeschool to start. And that's what she did. And now we branch out for most of Fulton County. And it's about voicing homeschool expos that are around. Atlanta Science Festival is very important, and just making a community that spreads out more, and that can give people motivation to start their own, you know, program. So it's about giving a voice and not to these programs and not just turning a blind eye to it. But yeah, it's few and far in between, but if you follow the like Atlanta Science Festival, stay in the community, that can branch out more. But it takes more people to do it more than just say it to make things happen. So
I can give you a little bit of advice. And I'm living in California right now, and in California the homeschool children can attend community college. If they are interested in a class, they can go to those colleges for free while they're in high school or elementary, whatever. So check with your community college, see if there's anything that your children would be interested in, and then fight for them to get into those classes. If you have to go and sit with them yourself, you go with them. Well, you know, it depends. And usually the tuition's pretty low, and if not, talk to them. Talk to them.
And honestly, I probably shouldn't say this, it's on video, but
but you're going
I've been
to.
Known to say things I shouldn't.
Yeah. Going off the record.
And, you know, at universities, generally speaking, nobody's going to kick you out if it's like a big classroom.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Hey, I mean, we've been there, right? It's true.
And so, but also you can also, I mean, my philosophy has come to be, you know, if they're not going to shoot me or injure me or hurt my family, then I'm going to ask. I mean, the worst they can say is no.
Right.
Walk never away and, you know, so find a yes. So maybe if you, whatever university or community college or any institution that's around, You can even talk to, I mean, it doesn't hurt. You can talk to a professor, go and see someone and ask, hey, would it be okay if, my kid sits in on this? Would it be okay? And a lot of times you're probably going to find a yes. You know, I'm not saying necessarily always circumvent the path, but it doesn't hurt to ask. If you've already, put it this way, if you've already gotten a no or if you already don't have what you need, then getting another no isn't going to kill you. You're going to find a yes eventually. And also look for, certainly these days, I don't want to just put you on the internet or on computers, but there's programs like this one called MentorNet, and it's actually, I think it's primarily, I don't know if it's still just for girls, it might be for girls and boys or young men and women, but it's people, it's the word MentorNet and then probably .org or .com. But with MentorNet, you can get someone that actually agrees to mentor the individual. And like they say, remember that old thing on the internet, they don't know if you're a dog, right? You could be a person or a human or not. So, you know, I don't say, again, it's not so much not to lie or whatever, but you can always talk to those entities and say, you know, I have a child this age or something. And so just go past those no's. There's a yes out there. I mean, if somebody wanted to come and sit in the class I had, fine. You know, so there's plenty of other people would probably let you do that.
She's right. You go to the classes, and if you sense that they don't want your child there, say it's you who wants to audit the course. Take your child with you. There are no doors that should be shut. You can keep them open.
And speak. I love the idea of science fairs. I love these ideas. Speak from my field, which is the game industry. When someone says they want to get in the game industry, how do they get in the game industry? I say go to what's called a game jam. It's like a hackathon. It's free. There's the big one, which is the Global Game Jam. It happens every year in January. At the most recent Game Jam, we continue breaking records. I think there were teams in 85 countries around the world. I think we made over 8,000 games in one weekend. It's usually hosted at a college, or it could be a home, or it could be a company. No age limit. Anybody can go. And I've seen people go as young as 5 years old. There was a five-year-old girl who went. I've seen multiple teams that were 100% women make a game. It can be a computer game, it could be a board game, it could be any kind of game. But by going, you meet other people of similar interests. You develop your own skills from whatever level they may be. At the end of the game jam, 48 hours, you now have a game that is made with a credits page. Your name is on that credits page. It now becomes part of your body of work.
Absolutely.
And you can go, and it helps you in resumes and going mm-hmm. forward. So I highly recommend game jams. There and then up front
and
here.
I have a couple of people in front of her.
Okay, you've got the box.
Hi, my name is Conch. I'm a working engineer in California as well.
Right.
I just wanted to touch upon what you had mentioned. One of the biggest difficulties that I know my friends and I have faced, and my relatives, is the kind of the unspoken need to change your personality when you're at work or, you know, in graduate school. And I was wondering what your thoughts were about, you know, for girls entering the field, about how to keep their, you know, curiosity and maybe their perhaps bubbly personality if they have that. And for, you know, young engineers, I don't know if I'm young anymore, but who are currently practicing. who are currently practicing, you know, so often I hear from, you know, my female coworkers, you know, I can't be bubbly, or, you know, I have to lower my voice, you know, things, we talk about things like that, where I have to wear eyeliner so people don't think I'm young. You know, there's the CEO of Theranos, that, you know, the lady who kind of really frauded a lot of people. It was a well-known fact that she lowered her voice a couple of octaves just so people would take her seriously. So I was wondering, what are your thoughts about how to combat this and how to kind of stay positive and curious when you have to keep fighting to perhaps right. change your personality every day in the workplace or in school?
I feel strongly about this, in that people should have just follow their own personality. And I've noticed something as people stand up here, when there's a body language thing that I've noticed that I hope people will change. And they stand up and they say, I study math, I study science, and they're kind of hunched over, like I'm sorry that I study math, I'm sorry. And I wish people would stand up and just stand up and put your shoulders back and say, this is me, deal with it, okay? And so I think role models are also really important. Having someone there that is just her own personality. I get invited to schools all the time because they just want to have a strong female role model for the little girls to look at. And I saw a great thing when I was playing Dungeons and Dragons once. I was at a store with D&D, and it was their D&D night. And most of the D&D games are a bunch of guys playing D&D. That's the stereotype. But there were also a bunch of women there, a bunch of moms who were there. And I was on one of these teams, and I was there, and a couple moms were there, and I think there was one or two guys there. And one of the little girls was there, and she was like, I don't know, 8 years old, 9 years old. And I saw her kind of looking around at all of us, and she said, okay, when I grow up and I'm an adult, this is what adult women do, is they play D&D. You know? And so that role model element is just so important.
Right? I can add to that, like, with me, like, I was one of, like, 3 to 5 girls in most of my physics classes, and I was like, I already stand out, you know, I can't change how I act, so, you know, I'm going to act how I want, I'll wear dresses to lab, you know, makeup, I don't care, but I felt like, you know, I'm already me, why try to hide that, can't really hide that, and, like, I went to a workshop with, like, working on graduate degree, and they would ask different, mostly male physics students, oh, what's something that you do outside of physics and stuff? And most would just have their identity be physics, to be like, oh, I study all day, I'm in the lab constantly. But, you know, to develop themselves, you know, that was a struggle on them because they felt like they had to fit in a niche too. So it's not just female, guys feel like there's competition to be like, oh, I've studied so hard, I'm working on this robot and stuff, to be in this persona. And like, everyone's trying to fit a mold. So, you know, be yourself, because, you know, everyone's trying to fit something.
And it takes courage to do that, yep. Sometimes. Yeah. It takes courage.
I mean, it comes, honestly, both courage, and I think it comes with age, right? I mean, I can attest to the fact that the older I've gotten, the less I worry about what some of y'all think. <There you go. laughs> But when I was younger, and even still now, there's things to which I will acquiesce for a purpose. For example, you know, I don't want to lose my job, right? So there's certain things I won't do that, you know, I want to be such and such. Any industry, anything, it's not just STEM is like that. You know, maybe some of you are familiar with, there's some companies out there, you know, they used to say very conservative companies, which is maybe a different meaning than it is now, but it meant, you know, you had to wear the blue suit and the you know, dark tie, or the women had to wear, you know, a certain level skirt, heels, certain, right. So there's certain things that go with certain entities, and you may be the game changer. You may come in and be the superstar that can change things, or you may be, just reality speaking, the person who comes in, does your thing, and with time and with recognition of your talents and what you contribute, you can do a little bit more. I'll be on, I think probably early on as a young professor, when I'm a full professor now, but as a, you know, starting out, I probably wouldn't have known of this, number one, something like DragonCon. And oh my gosh, I probably wouldn't have, you know, talked about it at work. Last year they did an article in my, you know, in the College of Engineering and in our website about, you know, Dr. Theda Daniels Race, blah, blah, blah. And I talked about all the great people that have been on the panel and what all they did at DragonCon. Now, it looks a little weird on the travel form, so I put Electronics Forum, all right? Right? I mean, you know. So there is, let's be honest, we can say, you know, certainly, I agree with Alonka and everybody, you be yourself, be who you are. There is a certain amount of playing the game that does have to be done in any field, that's right? True. If you want to stay in the field. And then as time goes, and it may be just your personality, or it may be your presence in the field, then you can start to kind of push the boundaries, you know, a bit more. So you just have to be a little bit, be realistic about it. But ultimately, if something is so untrue to you that is, you know, driving you nuts, then of course, you know, you got to find your other place. But you'll find your niche, yeah. And you just keep keep pushing at it, be who you are, but also be cognizant of the fact that you want to eat tomorrow, so that if you walk in the job in your cosplay, you know, and that's just not going to cut it, and you might get, you know, so you just have to be, I know that's an extreme example, but it's just to make the point
I literally did that.
Be who you are, but what did he say?
I literally did that. So. You,
I haven't yet. I haven't yet, because I told my students no video recording. I do not want to be on YouTube, but I'm getting close. They at least mentioned steampunk in class. Anyway.
My point was almost precisely yours of like, yeah, this is great. You can be yourself. You have to play the game. You do have to understand your environment. Like, I'm a computer scientist. I wear hoodies daily, and I reject any place where I can't wear a hoodie daily. But that being said, I also, now I'm a man, and I do understand that there's a certain element of respect that's not automatically given whenever you start speaking in a room. First, it seems to be experience. That seems to be one thing, right? You've been in a room where the vets talk and you shut up, and that's just kind of a thing. But I think ultimately it is an element of respect that's being kind of given and taken. And if you're new to an environment, that's never going to be a given, right? You are still trying to learn. And I think it's of the utmost importance that you do. And if you feel like you have to stifle or transform your personality for that to happen, that is an issue, right? But because I don't really think that respect should be an aspect of who you are turning yourself into. Now, there isn't an element of adaptability, but I mean transforming your personality to fit, lowering your octave of your voice intentionally. Like, it could be a thing of you, when you feel more confident, you start talking lower. That's a different thing than, oh, I'm in front of a room, time to put my boardroom voice on. I know I'm consciously doing this and I hate it. That's a different thing entirely. But I do think there's an element of time and respect that's given and taken.
I think so. I think I have a lawyer voice. I admit that. Especially when I'm on the phone talking with opposing counsel, I definitely have a lawyer voice, and I put it on. And you know, speaking of walking into your place of employment in your cosplay, I cosplay Dana Scully. What a shock! And to cosplay Dana Scully, I put on my black court suit and an FBI badge, and that's it. So I do go to my place of employment in my cosplay. I just don't have the FBI badge. But when I'm wearing that black, I mean, that's something I have grown into as a person, is when I put that black suit on, I am completely in character. It's just who I have become. And I do owe that to Dana Scully, because she was right there when I needed her at a very formative point in my life. And so I've sort of unconsciously taken on that confidence that I wish I had when I was younger.
X-Files, for those who don't.
X-Files, I'm sorry. Yeah. The younger crowd, yeah.
For me, it's Captain Janeway.
There you go. There you go.
So that's true. You do have, there are elements of having to play the game until you refuse. There are instances where you've played the game so much that you're tired of it. And at that point, it's, in my life, I've given myself permission to stand back and say, no, I'm not doing it. So, case in point, there was a time when I was looking for my career path in pharma, and I was not satisfied with what I was, so I decided to take some contract positions and just to check out what all was out there that I could do. And I remember getting several job offers on the phone just because of what my CV looked like. They would call me up, talk to me, and say, you're a perfect fit. Just come in and we'll sign the papers, or you give a talk or whatever. And as soon as they saw me, they would say, well, we've had a change in direction. Or we've had, there's a different, one guy just plain said, you're not going to fit in here. And they knew I was a woman. They knew what my background was. I could only think, what is it, my skin color? Come on, I don't believe that, but it might have been. So I got to the point where when recruiters would call me, I would give them the spiel and talk to them, and they say, oh, you'd be perfect for this person. I'd say, you know, between you and me, I just want to let you know up front, I'm an African-American woman, and if your client has an issue with that, let's not waste our time. And of course, they'd step back and go, oh, no, no, this isn't the case. And at that point, I started getting job after job after job because it travels, the news travels very fast. Okay, this is an African-American woman, let's introduce her to these people instead, you know, that kind of thing. So until you, there are, you do have to play the game. But until you say no, you know, there are some aspects where you just can't.
I got to tell you all the quick story with that that I think
and,
is...
And then just a couple more questions because we're out of time, but go ahead.
Okay. And actually, I was thinking of this when the lady mentioned having four kids, so you really don't look like you could have four kids. You look like a kid yourself, I have to say. But in terms of getting exposure and so forth, and as my colleague down the table mentioned, when I was a little kid, my mom wanted me to learn how to swim. Okay, and it's not a STEM thing, but it's, I think, related. And she had us in, had me in the Y, you know, the YMCA at the time, you know, day camp. And for whatever reason, they weren't teaching the five-year-olds how to swim. And she was not happy about that because that's what she thought was going to happen. So this was, I'll just say some years back. So she started calling around places in New Orleans, and she ended up calling the Jewish Community Center because they had a pool. Now, our family's Catholic, you know, automatically a little black Catholic, but that's not, you know, that's kind of a thing in New Orleans, but around the country it's a little weird. But anyway, so my mother called them up, and she talked to the gentleman on the phone. She's an elementary school teacher, has this very, you know, proper voice and so forth. And just before they hung up, she says, well, because he was saying, you know, yes, yes, your daughter could come and swim, and we have camp. She says, well, before I hang up, I should probably let you know, and so you know this is a few years back, she said that I should probably let you know that our family is colored. So I don't want to, you know, waste your time or mine. I thought you should know that. And the gentleman said, my people have been persecuted for thousands of years. Come on down. And so my family had a membership. We were members of the Jewish Community Center from the time I was about 6 or something like that up until the time I was about 13 when kids start, you know, want to do something in summer camp. So look for those different outlets at times. I mean, now with the internet, you guys got everything. But, you know, sometimes something that may not be the thing that you think fits, whether it's, you know, your faith or your race or your whatever, let them know. Absolutely. You know, the worst they can tell you is no, or give you a funny feeling and you'll know it. But it might open up. I can still say grace in Hebrew. So I really, you know, I'm well-rounded, okay?
All right. So we're almost out of time. Did anyone else have a... Yes, we have a burning question. Oh, wait, one question, and then...
One person here. And
then, yeah, yeah, Kim and her. Her. Okay.
So I had a question, but since we're running against time, I'm going to cut it short and, like, not even ask a question, but I just want everyone here to know about this program that Microsoft runs. It's called TEALS, Teach, Educate...
What's it called?
TEALS. Yeah, so it's Technology Education and Literacy in Schools. And basically, they look in for and train volunteers, people in this room who have a whole alphabet soup after their names, to go in and help educators learn how to teach technology.
Wow.
So they help teachers because I'm sure everyone in here who was a computer science kid knew more about the computer than the teacher did because she's busy teaching typing. Or, you know, or someone is busy there teaching something they don't know about. So TEALS helps them educate and develop programs around technology and these types of things in public education systems to improve it there because clearly it's up to us to help these failing systems teach the kids of the future.
Oh, thank you. Thank you,
John. Okay, last question. Okay.
I went straight to work out of high school, and I didn't know until now, 10 years later, that I really had a passion for science, and I'm just going to college now for the first time, and I was wondering if you... Thank you. Thank you. I was wondering if you had any advice for people like me who maybe are coming into STEM a little bit later in life who don't have those resources that, you know, we have for teenagers and children these days.
Play hard.
Commit to whatever you do because you don't want to waste any time with any nonsense or any of that. Play hard.
This is my passion. I'm so sorry.
I didn't go to law school until I was 40.
Yeah.
It didn't matter.
Go hard.
We had a lady on this panel a couple of years ago who got her PhD over the age of 55.
Yes.
So it's not too late.
All right. And I think that's it. That's a great way to end the panel. Thank you, and have a great DragonCon.
Thank you.